Mr. Paganelli.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Tony Paganelli. I represent the appellant, Cedar Farm. The District Court committed reversible error when it imposed a greater burden that was legally required on Cedar Farm to withstand summary judgment on the ejectment claim at count two of its amended complaint. Specifically, the Court improperly held that Cedar Farm had to come forward with evidence that money damages were insufficient to compensate Cedar Farm for LG&E's recurring breaches of the party's lease, even though LG&E had agreed for all purposes relevant here to accept the allegations in Cedar Farm's amended complaint as true.
Why does that matter? I mean, first of all, there's a termination clause that doesn't say anything about the things you're talking about. And secondly, irreparable injury is, in Indiana, as in every other state I know of, an element of an equitable claim.
True, Your Honor. The reason that it doesn't matter is twofold. First, we believe that the termination provisions in the lease were not exclusive. Second, I believe more importantly, the District Court relied on a Kansas Supreme Court case called Thurner v. Kaufman, which laid out circumstances under which a landlord under an oil and gas lease such as the one at issue here could nevertheless obtain termination under certain factual.
What the District Court said, however, was that it was willing to assume for the sake of argument that perhaps the Indiana Supreme Court might go that far in an appropriate case, but this wasn't an appropriate case. And so I'm not sure that you can get too much mileage out of this Kansas case.
Well, as we read the District Court's opinion, Your Honor, and I agree with you to a point, we believe that Judge Hamilton for the District Court determined that in his belief the Indiana Supreme Court would follow Thurner.
He just said it might. I'm not even sure he went so far as to say it would.
Well, on the assumption that he might, Your Honor, for my first point, I'll fall back and address the converse in a second. On the assumption that it might, Your Honor, his opinion, we believe, was focused almost exclusively on the question of whether the facts alleged in our complaint did or did not satisfy Thurner. So on the assumption that it might, we believe that the District Court's reversible error was in making the determination that the facts alleged in this complaint did not satisfy the standard under Thurner. If, taking a step back, we don't look at Thurner, then we fall back to the issues that we asserted below in our summary judgment response, relying primarily on the Four Seasons versus 1001 case from the Indiana Supreme Court, in which we argued in opposition to the summary judgment motion that it is an improper statement that as a matter of law, we are not entitled to the ejectment remedy simply because the lease does not specifically enumerate it.
But, you know, I'm mystified that you decided to walk away from a damages remedy in count one when the agreement actually had a formula for the cut down trees, cleanup of things like construction scrap materials and leaky tanks is something that is done every day in the environmental remediation business. So one could imagine getting a bid and somebody would say it'll cost you X dollars to do that. So I don't see why dollars aren't a perfect solution to that. If the shack is ugly, tear it down or build a pretty one. I don't know why the
colonial style.
Yeah, right. I don't know why the yellow pump jacks were yellow, whether there may have even been a regulatory requirement, but if there was some flexibility to repaint them, it seems to me that's remediable by damages. So maybe not 100%, but a lot of what you were asking for, it seems to me, was entirely addressable through money damages.
Two responses, Your Honor. First, on the question of whether things that had already been done could be remedial by damages, we disagree because once this land is damaged, repairing them, removing them, doesn't solve the problem.
Why? Trees are cut down. You can plant new trees. You can even pay a lot of money and plant big new trees. I'm completely baffled by that.
Because, Your Honor, this land is unique, and everyone says their land is unique.
All land is unique.
All land is unique, Your Honor. But this land is a habitat for endangered species. It is a protected classified forest. It's not merely a question of cutting down a tree and allowing us to replant it. It's a question of cutting down a tree, cutting down several trees, expanding their operation into that space so that the habitat for the wildlife shrinks just a little bit more, and then a little bit more, and then a little bit more.
But they did buy the mineral rights. I mean, you know, I'm going to use that term because oil and gas law is a little different from other kinds. I mean, they're called leases, but they're actually, in some sense, purchases of mineral rights. And the lease gave them the right to use the surface in ways that are necessary for the exploitation of those mineral rights, and it provides a damages remedy to the extent that there are incompatibilities.
Your Honor, the lease certainly does give them surface rights, but those surface rights are not absolute. Their obligation was to respect the land by conducting their surface obligation in a manner that is minimally invasive on the landlord's right to use the surface as a natural wildlife habitat and as a historical sanctuary. So on the question of whether we could just buy new trees and plant those trees, because this lease is unique in that it has no expiration date, what Your Honor is proposing, even if it were feasible, is essentially a cycle of endless litigation over damages and endless repairs, endless planting of new trees, even if that were a possibility, which we contend it's not.
You're saying that Louisville Gas is irrational, that they will pay any price, however large, in order to inflict and then repair environmental damage? And I don't see any reason to think that a profit-making corporation just irrationally goes about creating damages, pays up, does it again, pays up again, right? The obligation to pay money will induce them to behave in a way that conserves the surface resources. That's what the damages clause does.
I would imagine that it would, Your Honor, but the problem with this lease is that unless we can terminate the lease, unless the cost of the damages exceeds the amount they're willing to pay, we're in a quandary because all we can do is suffer the damages, file a lawsuit.
The only way to develop the mineral resources is to cut down trees. They will evaluate whether the cost of the trees exceeds the value of the mineral rights. But that's just what they should be doing.
But we believe, Your Honor, that their profit-making calculus, you know, whatever internal decision they make as to how much money they're willing to risk for the right to put a large gas derrick on a scene.
In any event, I don't understand your answer to Judge Wood's question. You began this lawsuit by saying they've inflicted large injury on our land. The contract gives a remedy for that injury. It may be, let us suppose, an imperfect remedy, but it is a remedy. But you've decided to walk away from the remedy and gamble everything on getting an ejectment order. And let me tell you, my inference is when you walk away from the money remedy, it looks very much like you're saying this money remedy is just trivial. We don't lose very much from walking away from it. And that also makes it look like there isn't any serious loss that should lead to ejectment.
Yeah, I don't believe that we've walked away from any money remedy
you
here.
You certainly have. It was dismissed with prejudice.
Right, and
you
are
not come back and refile it.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify this. You are not seeking a reversal and a remand so you can present additional evidence as to the adequacy of damages. That's off the table, right?
It's gone.
Yeah, that's totally, I mean.
Correct, and if I may address that, Your Honor, there were two separate classes of breach that caused us to bring our complaint. The first is the breach that we're discussing today, which are what I'll call the non-monetary breaches for damage to the land. At the time we filed the complaint, we believed there was a second class of breach that we alleged in our complaint, specifically in paragraph 20 of our amended complaint. We believe that in addition to damaging the land, they had also been improperly extracting natural gas from the property without paying royalties. We conducted discovery on that particular breach, determined that there was, in fact, not sufficient evidence to go forward. That's the damages claim that we walked away from, so to speak, Your Honors.
Actually walked away. Remember the law of claim preclusion. You walked away from anything that's happened on this land up until now that would give you a right to damage because you
can't
the opportunity
your claim
to raise it. So you're done with up until now. I have no idea what's going to happen in 2015, but you are finished.
That is correct, Your Honor. Our position remains that the damages that have been done and continue being done by virtue of these things still going on the land is simply irreparable by money damages.
I just don't see how we make the leap when the lease doesn't provide for termination when there's non-compliance. I mean, I don't see how you can get any relief.
The way we make the lease, Your Honor, is twofold.
The leap. I'm totally not understanding how you think you can make that come into existence. Termination is an option.
Again, looking at the controlling authority that Judge Hamilton relied on at the district court, or that he hinted may be reliable upon at the district court, The Thurner case from Kansas stands for the proposition that if a tenant under an oil and gas lease misbehaves to such an extent, there is an implied remedy of termination, even if the lease does not provide for an actual remedy. And I see that I'm out of time, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Carroll.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Let me address a couple of things right off the bat. Cedar Farm takes liberty with due respect to the language of the lease when it says that Louisville Gas and Electric had an obligation to take activities that were only minimally necessary and that we are to, quote, unquote, respect the land. The minimally necessary language in this lease relates to the use of rights of way and servitude, not with respect to our activities on the lease. And if I may, the minimally necessary language that Mr. Paganelli refers to appears in paragraph 2 of the lease at short appendix 24. Again, it relates to use of rights of way and servitude for pipelines, telephone and telegraph lines, structures, what have you, used for production and storage. Mr. Paganelli also adverted to the fact that...
Is he engaged in fracking, by the way?
Beg your pardon?
Is your client engaged in fracking on this property?
I certainly hope not. I don't know what it is.
Then you wouldn't know the answer. Fracking is a new technique for extracting natural gas by injecting water and steam under high pressure and fracking the rock underneath to increase the extraction abilities. It has greatly driven down the price of natural gas by increasing supplies, but it has a greater effect on the surface areas. I was just wondering whether you were doing that.
I do not know one way or the other, Your Honor. This is principally an oil and gas storage lease. There is production to a certain extent of native gas, but it is principally an oil and gas storage lease. Mr. Paganelli adverted to the fact that this is historically and environmentally sensitive land and that we keep expanding our operations. I would direct the court to the language of the lease. Cedar Farm conveyed all of its interests to its entire acreage to Louisville Gas and Electric for this oil and gas storage lease. So it is not an issue, and it was not before the district court, that we somehow had been engaged in encroachment, that we had a limited right on the land and we have exceeded the boundaries. That was not the issue. The lease gives us a right to the entire Cedar Farm acreage with certain limitations, such as we can't build any well within sight of the Withers Mansion, which is the antebellum plantation that's referred to in the briefing. We can't conduct any activity that is audible or visible from the Withers Mansion. So there are specific restrictions in the lease, none of which were alleged to have been violated. And with due respect to Mr. Paganelli, the Kansas case that Judge Hamilton said the Indiana Supreme Court might consider in an extreme circumstance, that case, Thurner, was so irrelevant to Cedar Farm's case that it was neither cited nor argued in the summary judgment proceeding. And with all due respect to Judge Hamilton, with the Barrett and the Rembarger case that we cited, we think that Judge Hamilton has given Cedar Farm the benefit of the doubt, because the Indiana case law dating back at least until 1918, that was Rembarger, said unless there is an express forfeiture clause in an oil and gas lease, we will not allow a forfeiture. If there is a forfeiture clause, then we have to make sure that damages are not an inadequate remedy. And with respect to the contention here that the only damages claim related to the failure to pay royalties on a new gas lease, I direct the court to the complaint itself. All of the background information, including the status of the land as historic and architecturally significant, I don't know how you have architecturally significant land, but that's another issue, that there are, you know, endangered bugs and critters on the land, all of that was incorporated, and the allegations of damages that we indiscriminately hacked down trees with out-of-state crews, I've never known whether it was the out-of-state crews that was the problem or the indiscriminate hacking of the trees. But all of those sins, if you will, by LG&E, by Louisville Gas and Electric, were incorporated in toto into the damages count, count one, and then reincorporated into the termination count. So the very conduct which Cedar Farm affirmatively alleged gave rise to a damage claim was the same basis that they used for termination. It is crystal clear that there is nothing in this oil and gas lease from 1996, which incorporated and consolidated leases going back to the 40s, that says anything about termination for disrespecting the land.
So it does contemplate termination if the oil and gas gives out or if you stop to use it for storage or if
we don't pay without notice and demand.
Don't pay without notice, and then you have an option yourself to terminate it on the payment of a dollar.
Right.
Right. And that's it.
That is it. That is it. And there is no other basis to terminate. And this was a standard summary judgment case. The cases that we relied on in our opening brief are the same ones that we relied on appeal that says in order for equity to step in, you must demonstrate that you don't have an adequate damage remedy. That's why, you know, Cedar Farm knew that from the get-go. They were pursuing damages. And only after the summary judgment was entered and we were facing a trial on this damage claim did they walk away, and only after we objected that it be without prejudice did they accept that it would be with prejudice instead of the conditions that Judge Hamilton imposed. There is no need to refer this to the Indiana Supreme Court. The cases, Rambarger and Risch, Risch was a Supreme Court case. Barrett was an Indiana Court of Appeals case, both of which the Indiana Supreme Court declined discretionary review on. So there is no evidence that damages were not an adequate remedy. In fact, as Judge Easterbrook pointed out, the damages were trifling, and in that event, Cedar Farm elected to walk away.
The record doesn't show whether they're trifling or not. That's just an inference I drew from the fact that Cedar Farm apparently doesn't want them.
Well, and I think that's it. Not, and the fact that somebody walks away from damages does not suggest that damages are an inadequate remedy. As Judge Wood, you pointed out, the pump jacks could be painted a different color. The fence could be, you know, made out of something more pleasing if, in fact, that were required under the lease. You know, the trash could be cleaned up. So there is no basis either under the lease, which the parties negotiated, or the evidence that was presented below. In fact, there was no evidence presented by Cedar Farm that the court should impose what is in essence the death penalty of equity, namely not just a mandatory injunction to clean that up and change that paint and do this, but we are going to terminate the rights that you negotiated and, in fact, had been in place for 60-plus years. The idea of the parade of horribles, we're going to have to sue and sue and sue and sue, you will look in vain in that complaint for any suggestion that there have been multiple lawsuits and that it was a situation as in Thurner, whether the poor farmer who lost his calves and his land was poisoned, he sued before the utility was operating under an injunction, and it violated, and it was sued again. There was a full trial, and basically the court said enough is enough. You know, this is extreme. There was no such evidence. Cedar Farm provided no such evidence to the court below. Based on this court's jurisprudence, if you arrive at the put-up-or-shut-up moment in a case on summary judgment, you do not present admissible evidence demonstrating a genuine issue of material fact, then if the law is with the moving party, you lose. That damages remedy was out there and available. We could hardly have sanely moved for summary judgment on the damage count. And so we sought to proceed with what we thought was the most expeditious way to argue and dispose of the case, because, frankly, we inferred, as Judge Easterbrook inferred, that the damages were trifling and it all could be fixed. But when you threaten to terminate a 2,000-acre underground natural gas storage lease, that's a big stake, and the lease didn't permit it. So we asked this court to affirm Judge Hamilton in all respects. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.